You're listening to Song Stories Happy Hour. We are your hosts, Francesca Lee and Ilona Brown, a podcast where we share the stories behind the songs and the songwriters who write the music behind the songs we all love. We're going to get the show started. Here it comes. When we get figure this out next time, we'll have the intro ready to go. But we're here with your hosts, Ilona Brown and Francesca Lee, and we're really excited. We have our special guest stars, Josh Schiffman and Matthew Kaplan. Guys, thanks for being on the show with us.
How's everybody doing?
Great. It's an honor to be here. I don't mean here. It's an honor to be. It's not an honor to be at my house. It's an honor to be on your show.
Well, we're really happy to have you here. And I just wanted to tell a little backstory that I met both of you in my songwriting group class that I've been doing for a couple of years now. And we just thought it would be a wonderful idea to bring the two of you onto the show because you two are very, very different types of songwriters and have different styles. And I just love the dynamic in the class when both of you have your own personal input on the songs and critiques. And Ilona and I just had a blast in the past sessions that we've been with both of you. And so we are very excited to have you here today.
Yeah, we're super excited to have you guys. And today it's a little bit of a different format because we're going to be actually listening to you guys play your songs live. And then we get to critique it live, which is really fun for us. And we're hoping that the listeners are going to enjoy it as well. So who's going to go first? Did we decide who's the lucky number one?
Yeah, Mecca, and then I'm going to shift this a little bit towards him.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to bring up your song, Matt. So I really love this song, and this was one of the ones that you showed. You actually brought the newest version in, but I remember when you played this song, it was several months ago when you originally wrote the song.
Yeah. Do you want to see the guitar more? Should we tilt this down a little? Let's see.
That's nice. Yeah.
What kind of guitar is that, Matt?
So this is a Godin. It's a Grand Concert. It's a slim body. It's basically, I play a lot of different acoustic guitars. I play electric as well, but I'm more acoustic. But this is my relaxed hanging out guitar. You know, it's not too, it's got nylon strings. It's got a nice warm sound. It's just sort of easy, you know.
How many guitars do you have?
Too many. every woman in my life. No, I probably have about 7 or 8.
Now, do you name your guitars?
No.
Josh, do you name your guitars?
You know, that never even occurred to me, but now that you mention it, I think I can start doing that.
I always thought you should name your guitar.
That's a great idea.
And also, as a fellow guitar player myself, I just love Matt's style because he plays fingerstyle guitar, which I do too. So we don't use picks and we make very beautiful sounds on the guitar, and Matt is just a master at that, and I love listening to your guitar style and playing as well as your song, so this is going to be a treat. Did you want to share the screen or allow me to so I can
sure
bring up the lyrics?
So shall I talk a little bit about the background of this song?
Sure, yeah.
So this song is interesting because as Francesca said, I have been playing fingerstyle guitar for a long time, but songwriting is pretty new to me. And so I first started a few months ago under one of the first classes that I took with her. And this was one of the songs, probably my fourth or fifth song that I started working on. And the first version got very mixed reactions. And so the basic idea of it is it's about someone who's been broken up with. Mm-hmm. And it's that feeling that when you get broken up with, you're kind of wrecked and like you turn into a bad person. And so the theme is a little bit dark. And there's a fine line to walk between sort of being too dark and being approachable, but people can relate to the feeling of that darkness. And so I've gotten such a variety of reactions to the song. And the first time I think it was actually a pretty negative reaction, not in terms of people not liking the music, but they thought that the way I presented some of the ideas were maybe a little bit too dark. So I kept working a little bit, kept sort of workshopping it, kept playing around with different ideas, different ways to say the same things that didn't come off quite as aggressively. And I guess that's just the songwriting process. And, you know, presented it again a few weeks ago. And I don't think it had quite the edge that it had the first time, although it sort of, it had the same meaning. Like, it still is meaning the same thing. And so it's just interesting to see how the song itself has sort of grown over time. And like, I've left in the music a bunch of the different sort of ideas that I've been playing around with. And so I don't even know which lyrics I'm going to sing time to time, because you'll see so many alternatives in there. But yeah, so this is sort of something that's evolved, and I think it's become stronger because as a group, we workshopped it, and you know, everything becomes better when you get the feedback.
Okay, and we have the lyrics up here now, and I'll help scroll down while you're playing.
Okay. Let's see. So, just depends how much the guitar you want to sing. There we go. Okay.
Tell us the name of your song, Matt.
It's called The Werewolf.
Nice.
Yeah. Alona, I don't know if you've heard this one. You may not have been in the class when I presented it.
I don't think I have heard it. I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited to get your reaction to it.
You brought out I don't turn into something worse.
Was wonderful, Matt.
That was so good. It's such a cool concept. It's such a cool concept. What were you going to say, Francesca? I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was just, I've heard this song a couple times, and I remember the first time I felt the same way. I thought, okay, it is a little bit, it could be taken in a way that sounds more harsh. You know, when you say you're going to go out as a werewolf, you're gonna break hearts, take hearts. but I'm really understanding. I mean, I always kind of knew the sentiment around this song. And I think hearing it again for the third time, it really is a beautiful way of the way that you have created this character as, using the werewolf as sort of an example of basically somebody who, has a broken heart. And in a lot of ways, this is sort of like from kind of maybe a male point of view. When they're closing their heart, they've been hurt, so they wind up hurting other people. I mean, I know I've been on the other end in relationships. I write a lot about unrequited love. That's like my thing, So it's kind of like, this is almost like the opposite of that, if I wrote a song that was like, I'm heartbroken, why did you do this to me? This could be the explanation for that, right? Like this song could be from the male point of view. Well, my heart's broken and I don't want to hurt you, but this is where I'm at because I'm hurting too, kind of thing.
Well, it's I think this comes out of experience. It was my first big heartbreak. I mean, a long time ago, but you get your heart really broken and you're sort of all over the map and you can't control your emotions. You can't contain them. They're just all over the place. And I just remember I was like lashing out. I was like, I remember going through it. And like after like a month of just being completely insane, I was like, oh, I'm actually becoming a bad person. I don't like the person that I am where like I'm going out with these girls. I have no intention because I'm not in a place where I can actually like be any good to them. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the only thing that I'm doing is causing all of these people pain. And, it took me, I think everybody, you learn as you grow, but it took me going through that to just process it and mm-hmm. just be like, oh yeah, like I can't let this thing sort of control me. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I think I've seen different people connect with this song a different way. When we presented this the last time in the class, there's one guy who just completely got it and he was just like, this is me, this I get it 100%. I need mm-hmm. to do it completely. And I don't think everybody is going to have this exact reaction, but this is certainly a reaction that I think some people have, probably more the male experience. It was an interesting metaphor and it meant something to me, I think, when I first started developing it.
This could be like the start of a whole new term in contemporary lexicon. You could be like, how was your date last night? And then they could be like, oh God, he's a werewolf. And like, now we're all going to know a werewolf, right? Like if Francesca, I'm not going to say if someone,
a vampire. I say vampires, emotional vampire.
Like an energy sucker. Yeah. And we'll be like, oh, he's just a werewolf. That'll mean like someone that just got their heart broken and they're on a rampage.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've definitely known men like that, that they something, or it, maybe it's not even heartbroken over a relationship. Maybe it's their childhood too. Like they're angry over what their father did to them or, family stuff and that, from a past relationship. And so that they have almost this sort of like wall that they have to create to protect themselves, but they don't want to hurt people, but then they do. And it's great. I love it. And it's so complex, but there's like so many ways to write about emotions and love and anger.
And what's interesting here is that the character of the werewolf, he knows that he's hurting other people and then he has remorse. And so you have a certain sympathy or empathy and you like the character. He's not just a total jerk werewolf. He's a compassionate werewolf.
Well, he doesn't, just having gone through it, like you don't like feeling that way. Like you feel bad about what you're doing. You just don't feel like you have any control over it, And I think, yeah, it's interesting how well the metaphor kind of fit that emotion. But yeah, I don't know.
The transformation and the kind of the inability to control, you know, your emotions around hurt.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Josh? We want to hear from you.
First of all, I'll say this. If hearing Matt live is totally different than hearing it on Zoom, and I guess that's combination of microphones, whatever, speakers or whatever, but much greater impact hearing it live.
Oh, that's cool to hear.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And I was like really into the song. I mean, I love that song when you played it before, but hearing it live and, you know, hearing your guitar and your voice and everything, I was kind of blown away. And very, really well crafted song, the change in dynamics. And
oh, cool.
Really well crafted. You know, it's fun. So on an aside, Nick Lowe wrote a song that has a similar kind of, it's about the same thing, but the song has a very different feel because of the way the emotions that it brought up for him or whatever. I think the song is, I trained her to love me so that I could break her heart. Like, you know, he's had these bad relationships, and like the next woman that comes around, he's going to train her to love him so that he can break her heart.
That's sadistic.
But this song has a completely different feel. But
I wonder if their viewers, listeners would get some insight out of your, if you can remember it, your reaction to hearing this the first time, because it was very different.
I think lyrically there were some things that upset me and certainly upset the women that were in the group because there might have been some references to drawn blood or something.
You know, I think that the main line, instead of I can't help the hearts I break tonight, it was I can't help the lives I take tonight. And I did sort of leave that as the last one because I like that little bite to it. But I think I set it up sort of to be different. It was like an evolution of that character and it wasn't as harsh to begin with. But you were the one person who you're like, this is violent and I don't like it. And you're like, you didn't like the music. You said the idea of it, I don't know if it's violent and it sort of unsettles me.
You know, and here's my feeling about violence has its place. I'm not by nature completely, I've gotten in fights myself, but not when it comes to hitting a woman or a child or whatever. So I think that's what really struck me. It's like the image of violence against a woman is a little too much.
See, but that was what I think was, it's good for me because that wasn't my intent. It was like physical violence was never what I intended. So it actually made the song better to get that feedback that was how it could be taken.
Yeah, because you get so wrapped up in what you're trying to project that, and you're not always aware of what you're actually projecting.
Yeah, and I think, I do leave that line in the very last part of the chorus, but I've established a different vibe the whole way through. And I don't feel like it means the same thing.
No.
Like Josh, when you first heard that song, you thought he's like literally taking lives. Like this is a song about a man murdering. Like this is.
Well, I mean, I think I knew, Zoom Matt enough to know that that's not him. But it was just over the top.
Right. Like that would really be upsetting if someone was writing a song about murdering a woman. Like.
Yeah.
That would be upsetting.
It is interesting that with most of my songs, I don't really feel the need to give like a little preamble explanation of what the song's about. But with this one, I do, because I feel like it does have that sort of possibility of being misunderstood. And so I want people to sort of establish what the core idea of it is before I go into it. And I don't really feel that about other songs. I don't really feel like they have a subject matter that requires that. And maybe it's me overthinking it, but that's...
So, because even when you go hear, performers that have, complex songs, you'll often hear them do that, for certain songs.
Yeah.
Even if they've done it a million times and the people have heard it a million times, they put some background to it so it puts it in a context. Yeah.
That's really some good. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely knew that it was more of a metaphor. I definitely got that. I think that the way that you revised the song, I like that you left that at the end, but the little changes you made in the song just have it delivers better, I think that's mainly it. It's not that we thought that you were singing about the actual act of violence, but sometimes you have to think also when people are not really like we're learning about your song, and we know what your influence was, and you know the backstory with it. But what if you were just listening to it, right? Just say you walked into a place and like it's in the background, you know, and all you hear is the lives I take tonight. So I think of it that way.
I think people would get it too. I think they understand. It's a metaphor.
Right. But I love that song. And I think you've written some really great songs, and that one's great. Well, should we move on to Josh's song?
Yeah, we're excited. But before we go to Josh's song, we're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back to hear Josh Schiffman's song. Josh, what are you going to be playing?
Let It Rain.
All right. So we'll be back in just a minute to hear Josh Schiffman's Let It Rain. Join us for our Song Stories Happy Hour Writers Retreat, October 9th from 10 to 4 p.m. Sign up on our website, songstorieshappyhour.com, to be entered to win our raffle, where you could win a chance to have your very own song featured in our Song Stories Happy Hour podcast. Remember to bring a friend. We love referrals and thrive on word of mouth to keep this podcast going for you.
Turn me on and turn me on, playing me like a song,
like it was nothing. This is Let It Rain, and it was prompted by driving through a tough part of San Francisco and just happened to see this, I guess, homeless guy hanging out in front of a closed church, and he just looked kind of like an emaciated Jesus. Mm. I don't think that was intentional. It just kind of naturally looked like he'd be about Jesus's age when Jesus died, which was 33. Mm. Of course, this guy could have been 23 and looked 30. But anyways, so I don't know. Yeah, and it just kind of prompted, you know, thoughts I have about, hypocrisy, organized religion, how culturally we could use for a good soaking, clean out some stuff that is kind of detrimental to the health and safety of our country. And I don't know, some random thoughts came up and I kind of tried to weave them into a song. But I've always been distrustful of organized religion. And so it was prompted by that. Like, here's this poor guy. Here's a church that's closed down, probably because they're just losing money on it, right? Mm. And it's closed down. They have nothing to offer him, you know. Mm. I'm not necessarily anti-religion, but, you know, I'm very suspicious of all the hypocrisy.
Okay.
This is one of my favorite songs of yours, Josh. I heard this.
Okay. Hopefully I won't, you know, mangle it too much. You know, I'm not like Matt. I'm a very novice guitar player. I'm a novice singer.
Oh, I thought you were saying I mangled it.
What? No. Oh, I might mangle it, not like Matt would. Yeah. Matt would not mangle it.
Too late.
Is that clear? Okay. I don't know. Yeah, Matt, other than the guitar playing, the singing, the song, you know, the lyric writing, the dynamics, other than that, your song was what? No. No, Matt does not mangle, especially on guitar. Matt does not mangle. Yeah. So, yeah, guitar is kind of, you know, new to me within the past few years. Singing is something I never thought I'd do. I always avoided singing, and I literally never really sang before 5 years ago. I mean, so I was just kind of afraid to open my voice. I'd always played in bands as a drummer, and largely for singer-songwriters, for all through my 20s, all through my 30s. I quit when I was about 40. I was getting married for the second time. Playing in bands hadn't worked out well for my first marriage. And so I just quit, shut it down, and then, you know, raised a family, got more serious about work. And just within the past few years, I wanted to kind of get back to music, but I didn't want to go back to playing drums because you're always at the mercy of every, you know, self-involved narcissistic singer-songwriter out there. I want to be that narcissistic, you know, self-involved.
Why did you look at me when you said that?
I'm just looking at that.
Sure. I think all artists have a bit of narcissistic qualities.
Yeah,
maybe just a little bit, you know.
Well, I mean, to some degree, especially if you're the front person, you know, you crave people looking at you and paying attention to you. Let me tell you, it doesn't work out real well for a drummer.
Right.
What are drummers? If the front lead singers are narcissists, what are drummers?
Drummers are just kind of the machinery that makes things, you know, work, that holds things together. And I'll tell you, when I was very young, if you were a drummer without a van, you weren't playing in a band because the drummer was kind of expected to have the van.
Oh.
You know, it's like, you could always replace the drummer. You could get a drummer with a van.
But I feel like the drummers are the ones that actually wind up making more money, and can, because they're harder to find. There's more guitar players than drummers. So I feel the drummers I've known have learned to really maximize on,
yes,
if they're, especially if they're good and they're like, okay, I'm going to go and offer my drumming for different singer songwriters. And then they can make a whole sort of living off of that, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting actually when, so right at the point when I quit, I actually was kind of in demand, at least locally. And I had an offer to go on tour with a guy that was, you know, doing pretty well. He was kind of a very country rock guy who he was getting quite a bit of recognition, and he had heard me play with a couple of bands I was playing with. And he asked me if I would go on tour, and I had just lost interest. You know, it's like, I just wasn't interested in doing it anymore. But yeah, you can. But I think, like, you know, if you were a drummer or bass player or something, and you, like, you know, take it really seriously, maybe go to music school for a while and really learn how to read music well and all, you could do very well because the demand is high. Mm-hmm. Playing drums for singer-songwriters, yeah, kind of, but they're so kind of like flighty about, you know.
Well, anyway. Well, thank you.
You know, I don't, you know, well, one of the best ones I ever played with was this woman, Hannah Marcus, who was unbelievably talented and unbelievably frustrating to work with, because you'd get these songs honed to a point where everybody loved them, and then she'd completely strip them down and start all over.
Mm.
It's like, I went through that with years for her, and I was the only band member that stayed with her. She drove everybody else insane. I was already insane, so I had no place to go from there. Anyways.
Okay.
All right. No more stalling. Oh, let's go.
Tell me to shut up.
Come on, Josh. Let's hear the song.
I'm avoiding playing the song.
Come on.
Right.
We're rooting for you.
Are you? Okay. I saw Jesus downtown. He was looking mighty thin, hanging on St. Jude's. They would not let him in. I said, Jesus, they ain't open. Oh, where is their shame? They're open when it's sunny. They ain't open when it rains. Let it rain, let it pour, and pound on their door. Let the rain expose their shame. Let it rain. Saw Satan on TV. He wore a cross round his neck. You would think he would scorch him, only added to his debts. He was praising a pill that could ease my pain. But I died in the gutter, for I lay down where he's laying. Let it rain, let it pour, drive the devil from my door. Let the rain drown his flames. Let it rain. I saw Mary in my dream. I thought she had moved away. She said, no, I'm just quiet, but there's things I should say. It's gonna rain. It's gonna rain. I see dark clouds rising, flood to our shores, and maybe it'll settle these scores. Let it rain, let it pour,
and soak to our core leathery. Wash these stains, let it rain, let it pour, let it come down in force. Let it rain, let it rain, let it rain.
Wow.
I actually did get lost there for a second. I forgot where I was on that third verse. It's like fumbling around.
It actually worked out perfect though, actually, because I've heard this song before, and I was thinking about that, but it actually worked out very well.
Oh, good. Good. It was that moment of like, I'm into the song, I'm into it, and then all of a sudden, where am I in the song?
I like how you dropped.
And I can't memorize a lyric. I cannot memorize a lyric. I have a really hard time. I don't know if you have that, Matt.
No, it's just all works in progress. But you have to play it a lot to really get it.
Yeah, I have this. I just have a really hard time. Like, sometimes I'll be in the middle of a verse and I'll go back to a verse from before, and then I get. But anyways, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was like had a very meditative quality too. I mean, I lost myself in there with it.
Oh, thanks.
I really liked it. It's such a beautiful. Can we see the lyrics again, Francesca, for a second?
Yeah.
They're such a cool. Those lyrics are just great.
Roll back up.
What do you make of it, Matt?
You know, I've heard this a few times. I have always liked the core concept of it, and the music in it is solid. I think it's really evolved a lot, and your guitar playing has evolved a lot with it. I almost wish people could hear like the early revisions of this song and hear like the paths that it took. I think you've gotten a lot more comfortable with playing it. I think, you know, you have explored a really interesting concept here. And it's not necessarily an easy one probably for everybody to come onto.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what makes it interesting. Yeah, so the F major 7, how are you fretting that?
So you know what? One of the reasons I just play that as an F major 7 is just because I'm avoiding playing bar chords.
I see.
I've had carpal tunnel in both hands, and I'm just kind of limited. So I can play a bar chord, but it actually starts hurting me a lot. So, and sometimes I say it's an F major 7, but I'll just skip the E at the top.
Yeah.
I'll just play the F. Those three. Yeah. I'm pretty limited.
No, but it sounds really nice. It was sort of a curious choice in the middle of that. So I was wondering what led you to that? If there was like a sound that sort of was backing up something for you.
It's a deficiency.
No, I think it sounded really nice. And then I think I almost like if you scroll to the very end, I almost thought that some.
Sorry.
It's okay. I almost thought that some of. Like the very end, sorry.
I know it's going great. Hold on. Yeah. I did it too many times. Okay. All right.
I almost thought that this would actually, some of the parts of this just thematically would benefit from either, using some upper extensions to give it a bit of a different sound, just to make you feel a little bit unsettled or something.
Like but maybe, I'm not sure, I don't know what we mean by that.
So like if you use the sus chord at the very end to not make it major or minor, to just make it sort of jangly. And I'm not saying that would be an improvement, but it would be a way of sort of reinforcing a theme.
Mm.
And it just is like, I thought that you were using that F major 7 as a way to sort of reinforce some thematic idea, like, but
I haven't progressed to the point where I would do that. Okay. I look forward to the day when my guitar playing, you know, can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But I really think that like this song for sure would allow for that in terms of using some extensions to just give it a different color.
Mm-hmm.
And then even like if you hit like at the very end, like a sea sauce or something.
Mm, mm-hmm. Right. Because you can really flavor things that way.
And just to let it be like jangly at the end and be like, oh, this wasn't supposed to be resolved.
Right.
You know?
That's interesting. Yeah.
I don't know that would improve the song. It's just sort of a thought.
But I'd like to try those things. Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. No, I was going to say, Matt always has some great advice, especially for the different chord ideas and changing things up. because I think sometimes as songwriters, we kind of get into sort of our, you know, what we default to playing and how we play it. So it's really nice because Matt, you being an accomplished guitar player, you definitely have a lot more knowledge when it comes to that, especially if you're a basic guitar player, songwriter. I think this song has developed so much. I mean, from when I first heard this song, and I do really like when you drop down on this part, the Mary part, I saw Mary in a dream. I like how you, I don't know if that was intentional, but you kind of got quiet there and.
Yeah, because I kind of wanted to make it a little bit dreamier. And, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, she's kind of out of the picture and she could be kind of, you know, assisting things, but she's a quiet person.
I think just hearing this song, if it was recorded, that would be a great place for the band to drop out and then kind of rebuild and up.
Yeah, that, you know, and that's right where I got lost in the song, where I was trying to build it back. And I'm like, I'm trying to build it back, but I forgot the building blocks.
But you made your way there. And I think that's good. I think what's really great is I knew what you were doing, because that has, I think, happened to all of us, where you just like quickly think and you're able to just get right back into the song. But actually, I liked what you were doing there. That was kind of cool.
I didn't know what I was doing, so I couldn't repeat it. But thanks.
Sometimes accidents, I think, can turn out to be, they can sometimes make a song. I've had that happen before.
Right.
I played the wrong chord on a certain part, and then it turned out that's probably the right way. I should have played it all along, and then I keep it that way. So I've done that before.
Well, and I think also it's like, if you live in fear of making the mistake, you're giving it too much power. I mean, a lot of times people make mistakes performing and nobody knows, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you're living in fear of making the mistake, you know, when you're doing something live, you're giving it too much, you know, too much power.
Well, and right. I actually think when someone makes a mistake, the other thing is there's a sweetness to it. If people just acknowledge it and kind of go, oops, or, you know, either it works out well and then you stumble upon something really nice, or you kind of can laugh about it and it makes you human. And there's a certain authenticity and sweetness about it.
That's true.
That's very endearing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep going, then I think it's intimate. People get to like, ooh, they got a little feel of behind the polish or behind the scenes, the real person, the chink in the armor. There's something very sweet.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the reasons I've always liked going to hear singer-songwriters, like, you know, just playing live, even in small settings, because you do, you know, you get more of a feeling of who they are. And, you know, you hear the mistakes and the, you know, almost, whereas like, you know, these overproduced concerts where everything is just so slick and, you know, you might as well see it on TV.
I agree with what you're saying. I mean, it's what you were saying, Ilona, that's what makes people connect with you. I find that, actually, you know, what's funny is Diane, who is a woman that was recently in our songwriting group, she actually was in a previous songwriting group of mine a couple years ago. And I remember I played a song that was very polished and together, and we kind of stripped it down and I talked about my process. And, you know, the class was impressed and had a lot of questions. But then at one song that I played, I forgot the words, I think, or something like that. And I remember her saying, actually, oh my gosh, it made me feel so much better that if the teacher forgot the words to the song and play the wrong chord, now I don't feel so bad. But I remember her saying that, actually. That's, and she was just starting out, but that, it's funny because she was just in our class, but I remember that from about maybe 2 years ago when I first met her. She said that, I remember, in the class.
So, you know, that brings to mind, like, I've seen several, like, you know, really top-notch performers, like, start a song and then they'll stop. Because they did something wrong or whatever. They might even be playing in the wrong key, you know, their capoed or something. And it's like, it is. It's like, it's so kind of endearing.
I've done that before I used to have those 2-hour gigs that I play. And then I knew, like, just, you know, part, I would get into the song And I just knew I was singing in the wrong key or was too high. And then I'll stop and go, you know what? Sorry, guys. I'm like, I'm gonna do this over again. You're gonna trust me. You're gonna enjoy this a lot better. And then I'll just change the capo and then start singing. But I've done that many times. I think if you do it in a natural way, that, you know, the thing is, I think that we're the biggest. We judge ourselves so much, and really, most of the world is thinking about themselves. So they're not really thinking about, oh my God, Josh, you played that wrong. Even though I've never heard this song before for the first time. And I know exactly where you messed up. You know, it's just kind of like we create these sort of illusions in our head and they become so real for us. But really the reality is other, it's just completely different. And
yeah.
Well, it's like the art of making a mistake.
Right.
I used to play open mic for years at this roadhouse in Salt Lake City called the Dead Goat Saloon.
Dead goat. Wow.
Not there anymore, but it's an interesting old place. But you know, everyone would show up, and it's a bunch of sort of amateurs playing, you know, amateur level music, and you'd screw up occasionally. And I actually found that, you know, everyone there is on your side. Everyone there is cheering for you. They're not really sort of so super invested in your performance, but. They are positive towards you. Like they didn't pay a bunch of money to see you. They're not being super critical. And when you screw up and then sort of take a moment and recover, they actually have like a better feeling towards you. They're actually sort of cheering for you. It actually involves them a little bit more. They actually feel better about you than they did before it happened. And so even though you never want to screw up when you're on stage, it happens. And you just do it a couple of times. You're like, oh, that's not the end of the world. And people aren't there to kill me. Maybe if they paid like $100 for a ticket, they'd feel very differently.
Right. They want you to do well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for casual performers, I don't really think it's a problem. I actually think it's it makes you more human for sure. Mm.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys. That was just so fun. I really enjoyed having you both on. I thought both songs were really beautiful, beautifully done. And it was fun to have you on.
Yeah. What a great experience.
Yeah.
Really, I really appreciate it. I do appreciate it.
Well, we can't wait to have you back on the show. And this was really fun. And it's just great to see you two together, because you two have been on Zoom for a long time.
Really strange. It's weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Well, they're real.
This is the first time we've seen them in the same screen. Like, what's happening?
Yeah, well, it's been a weird year and a half with a lot of Zooming. Yeah.
Matt, what did you say the other day? You're like, I didn't know what you. I only know what people look like from like their top up, like two, the top third.
Yeah, you just never know.
Yep, you never know with the bottom two thirds. The bottom two thirds. Well, thanks for coming, and we'll see you all next week on Song Story Happy Hour. We'll see you next Friday. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, bye.
Bye.